So, David, good morning.
Good morning, Madonna.
So is forgiveness in decline?
Right.
Yeah. We've had a couple of things going on this morning where forgiveness has been one of the little topics as we've been getting through our day.
Right.
And it's something that when we're chatting about different clients, it's really hard for some people to even get there. You know, they
Wow.
can't even imagine that, well, it's because a lot of people think, well, why would I forgive you? You did this to me. But forgiveness, of course, in relation to mental health, it's nothing to do with the other person. It's just with yourself.
Well, that's what they say, but there's controversy around
Okay.
that. So there's this, well, if we want to go into it, because I think that because forgiveness is on the decline statistically, and the claims for that are because of the internet and polarization,
Right.
right? So the claim is that, who knows, it makes the people harder to forgive. And also that social awareness is changing. Like,
Right.
for example, when I grew up, when we grew up, it was like Christian society, and I was Catholic, and that was one of the main things. So confession was one of the sacraments, and it was a process where you, to get forgiveness, first you had to admit what you did, then you had to kind of be sorry. And then they gave you something called penance, so then you had to make up for it.
Right.
Right? So in my upbringing, I was shown this way of doing things. Nowadays, there's this thing that you, it's suggested that you should forgive people who aren't sorry. Now, that seems to me to be a bit odd, because in psychology, they claim that that frees you. Except if somebody's in a pattern of doing something to you and you keep forgiving them, they'll keep doing it to you.
Right.
Unless it's resolved, I guess.
Yeah.
But so that's just one part of it. I mean, forgiveness is a powerful tool, and even though we mightn't forgive some people on some levels, I think generally we do it all the time. It's an ongoing thing that we do all the time. We have
Yeah.
little scattered things with our kids or our siblings or friends,
Yeah.
and most of the time, like, I forgive them and get over it pretty quickly, and there's nothing even to make up. It was just some difference of opinion or a misunderstanding at the time.
Yeah.
What do you think?
Well, you know, with the whole empathy thing, you know, it's sort of, there's a lot less empathy these days, I
Or
find.
misplaced empathy.
Yeah. So going back about 10, 15 years ago, there was a guy who wrote a book and he was talking about how the fact that he'd muscle tested 2 million people over 20 years and the frequency of people on the planet was increasing.
Frequency
Their frequency of love, forgiveness,
was improving.
joy, it was improving over 20 years. So it's like the whole energy on the planet was improving. But honestly, it feels like that's going down these days. Hey, little Teddy.
Well, some. Are we going to pause?
Do you want to sit on my lap? Oh, you want to lie down on here? Okay, we're going to continue our chatting, okay, Teddy?
You lie down and get comfy there, Teddy. You'll see. That's it. Oh, that's it. Get on that.
It's time to fever. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay,
What were we
everyone.
talking about?
You know Teddy. So anyway, he's in here. So
Where were
yeah,
we?
so with empathy, one
Oh.
of the things that is happening is that because we've got so many neurospicy kids, I think it's now, I heard this morning it's 1 in 24 kids have got autism these days. So, and one of the things that can happen is that with kids who are neurospicy, there's these things in the brain called mirror neurons. And the mirror neurons don't switch off until 7 to 9 years old. But part of what the mirror neurons do when a baby or a little kid is looking at their mum and their dad, they're taking in the energy, they're taking in the love, the care, the compassion, that oxytocin. So by looking at someone where they're getting love, care, compassion, they're actually creating neuronal pathways in their brain.
Right, so the mirror neurons activate whenever they see something.
Yes.
So they're activated by movement,
Yes.
and obviously what the activity is in the environment, the
Yeah.
mirror neurons open up to.
Yeah. So there was one study that looked at empathy and mirror neurons, and basically, kids who don't have them working properly, they don't develop empathy.
Right, well, that's one way of looking at it from what perspective is that coming from?
That's from a brain integration neurological perspective.
Well, statistically, empathy is declining.
Right, okay.
Right, so I studied that at uni. So empathy's been on the decline long term, and it's a gradual decline, and it's getting worse. And that actually works in synchronicity with secure attachment. So
Right.
secure attachment in relationships is also on the decline.
Yeah.
And those two are related. So even though, and also another thing is some of those neurodiverse things are often could be also looked at from a trauma point of view.
Yeah.
And so you end up with very similar behavioral things with trauma, whether it's big T trauma or little T trauma,
Yeah.
as if you've got the genetic or the damage in the brain. Because once this prefrontal cortex isn't activated well,
Yeah.
the brain isn't integrated, and you end up with those similar problems with head injury, with childhood negative experience, or also with the chemical problems and or genetic variants in the kids who end up with like different types of neurodiversity.
I might actually share this picture for a sec about the grief gauge. Is this something that you guys study in holistic counseling?
Oh, in all counselling.
Yeah. So basically, I learned this as part of my counseling kinesiology going back 25 plus years ago. And it depends, I'm sort of thinking, because if you look up anything about empathy and forgiveness, it'll all go on about social media and how social media is the bad guy. And well, it's one of the things that everyone says.
And they
So
they're those things
it's
of
a scapegoat. Social media is a
yeah,
scapegoat.
and they do it because they want a short answer,
Yes.
right?
And
The
it's
same as
annoying.
well,
Yeah.
it's same as any short answer for a complex problem.
Yes.
And so you
So
can just
basically, the grief gauge, the grief cycles of emotional stress syndrome. So if someone gets, like, just say the last 5 years, for example, how many people are stuck in, say, the grief of loss? You've lost your job, you've lost a loved one, you've lost your livelihood, you've lost somewhat your health. How many people are stuck in grief of loss and they can't get out of it because they're not being seen, they're not being heard, they're not being understood, they're not being listened to, they're not being. So, people can get stuck there, and if they don't have someone helping them get out of that, they're going to be there for the rest of their life.
Well, they can do people.
You can draw on there, Teddy. Thank you. Yeah.
The color in the heart, it makes it more beta.
Mwah.
Did I say beta?
Yeah, beta. Beta testing.
I was supposed to say beta.
Better. And if we get stuck over here at, say, anger, you might actually end up having never being able to get out of that. And how many people are stuck in anger at the moment? If they don't do counseling, if they don't do brain integration, if they don't do something, and those people who feed their anger are often around them more. They hang around people who allow them to stay in that space
Well,
rather
they
than.
might be trapped in that situation.
Yep, absolutely.
Voluntarily too.
No, but sometimes their family and friends allow them to be there, rather than the home situation. Sometimes it's actually the extended family just allow it to continue.
Well, people don't know. People have got fairly limited skills, and so people with better skills in working out how to be resilient are often better at fighting that stuff. When it gets stuck, it can be stuck for a number of reasons. A, you might have some types of grief and loss that are so severe that, often when a parent loses a child, they grieve for the rest of their life, and that type of thing, people will often not be able to heal no matter what they do. There'll
Yeah.
always be some type of residue. And another thing is that with big problems, Carl Jung says that it's often when another big problem comes along
Yeah.
that it actually knocks that out, right? That so it might be on your mind forever, but then when a bigger problem comes up, all of a sudden it gets overridden.
That one's so much. Oh, it is Gordon Dixon. I was thinking it's exactly like Gordon Dixon's.
Right.
Source, Gordon Dixon, 1996, Integrated Health Kinesiology.
Well, everything's still similar to that in the latest research.
It's pretty good, isn't it? Because it gives such a nice little overview of what's going on.
Well,
And
basically, all the things are happening all the time.
yes.
And there's been a lot more updated research, especially on childhood trauma, which is probably more precise now. But also, that's considered when you look at the research, reasons that people are finding it harder to forgive is the awareness of childhood trauma and neglect on, and so because people are aware of that, they're more inclined to be pretty aggressive towards their parents, and which I kind of get a bit, but then it depends on the situation, I guess. It depends what happens. But it was like before, like with the ACE studies, the Adverse Childhood Experience studies, they're only really recent. So they only started like 20, 25, 30 years ago. They started doing that. And now all the kids are aware of it. It's like, so it's pretty hard for the parents too, because the parents, they're more focused on being perfect all the time.
And
And
obviously one of the things about social media is that because kids are on device, and yes, parents are, we always talk about this, parents are just as much to blame for reduced face-to-face family time as kids are. Like, it's really common for, you see it all the time in restaurants and cafes, everyone will be sitting on their phone. Everyone. So it might be a game here, a text message there. It's just like this crazy, we can't wait for 3 minutes for the coffees to arrive without everyone grabbing the phone. So there isn't as much face-to-face interaction, which means again those mirror neurons aren't getting that interaction. And when you're
That's yeah, and
sending a
so
text message to someone, it's very different being able to go, well, you did this and you did this and you did something else. And then it becomes this back and forth that becomes really angry. It escalates because there's no face-to-face.
Well, the
You're not
face,
seeing the social cues.
all of the face-to-face touching, it's all, they call it co-regulation. So with more than one person, you can co-regulate, which is what's meant to happen. And when we're distracted and not co-regulating with our kids or our partner, we're not co-regulating anymore. We're just self-regulating. And then so the connection that occurs from co-regulation doesn't happen, which is the attachment. Because a big part of attachment is the co-regulation. It's same as in, if you're having marriage problems, you hug at every intersection. And that automatically creates co-regulation that'll have an invisible positive effect, because when you hug, it releases oxytocin, especially more than 10 seconds. It releases a whole bunch of positive hormones.
Bye-bye, sweetie. Mwah. So I think that co-regulation, one of my favorite podcasters sort of talks about when any time him and his wife are having issues, he just suggests, or sometimes she does, but he often realizes he's in the wrong. So he'll suggest that they just go for a big walk. He said it's really easy when you're out in nature and you're out, when you're outside in nature with your dogs and just getting away from everything, how easy it is to actually just start communicating again.
Well,
And
yeah,
that's not face to
what
face,
walks the
but
difference
maybe
there?
when you're fighting, it's a bit safer to walk side by side.
Now, well, side by side, something they found in men's groups, that they actually get them sitting side onto each other, because men are less comfortable front to front. Yeah, that's why men are less inclined to, they don't like to. Whereas if they sit like this, like in the men's shed type thing, they sit to the side and they're more like, and I noticed that with my boys. It's like, especially my little boy, he was a little bit non-verbal and he didn't talk about his feelings much. But when I'd go driving with him, I worked out, off, he'd just start talking. And I wondered if that was because he was sitting beside me. But then when he started getting deeper, he was always sitting beside me
And you were
in the
busy.
car, and I'm busy driving. Oh, Dan, 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 and all of a sudden these deep things come up that he'd never talk about. And then, that's how we started our really nice communicating on a deeper level that we do still. As well as
It's
teenager.
sort of funny because there's someone in any of you have listened to me talk about this will know this story, but there's a family member who her and I haven't spoken in 20 years, and it's really quite angsty, not real pleasant. And one of my aunts commented that she, after my mum died, she just cried lots and lots and lots and lots and lots. And I did not care because I did not want her at the funeral. But it's now a worry for the other people in the family that maybe if she dies, there's going to be a heck of a lot of unresolved stuff because she simply doesn't have the courage or the tenacity to sort anything out. So
Well,
she just keeps going into these levels of grief.
what happens, like, so one of the main reasons for forgiveness is to resolve things. Now, the word resolve is an important word, because in family systems therapy, it's what's noticed about families that are dysregulated, especially if they've got a narcissistic or controlling pattern or series of patterns going, is that nothing ever gets resolved, right? And there's a and so they don't get resolved because it's kept a secret. They don't get resolved because if anyone talks about it, they get punished. They don't get resolved because they don't get resolved. And so with those family systems, you end up with all this pain being caused and nothing ever being resolved. And people become adult kids and then they're like, their dad beat them up when they were kids. And then mum abandoned them when they were born or something, really, and put them up for adoption, then went and got them or things like that. And then nothing's resolved. And then you see the way they operate, they don't resolve things either. Like if someone has a conflict, instead of fixing it, the person who's complaining, they'll get the silent treatment, then they'll get as well as the anger. And it's like, and the whole point is to not resolve anything. And the thing is that if you don't resolve things, so because people, we're talking about forgiveness, people say forgiveness resolves. It only does if it's done right. Like my counseling supervisor, she's a very experienced family therapist and she works as a family court writing reports. And at supervision a few months ago, she brought up, "Does anyone have a problem with forgiveness?" And she goes, "I do." And I'm like, "Oh, I think I do too." And she goes, "What's the issue?" And I go, "Well, if you forgive people, if they're not sorry, they'll just keep doing it again." So it opens up the, you can't make a boundary with people like that, right? Because no boundary, you forgive them straight away. They want to be forgiven for nothing, and then they just do it again. And she said that's the thing. It's like, and she said that, she goes, the type of cases she deals with, and she's been in the paper for helping people catch some pretty terrible false accusations against people. And she said that, and she said she made the statement that it's like, some of the things people do to each other, it's an insult to ask them to forgive them, right? And so, we get that level of thing with forgiveness, where actually, really, the whole process of forgiveness is that you should be really sorry. And like in that Catholic system, I mean, people might have a better idea that first you admit it to the other person, and then you say sorry, but then you make up for it, right? And then you're free, right? But forgiving someone who's not sorry, what's the point in that? People say that it frees them, but I just say that they got away with it. Like, there's no point in doing the forgiving thing at all. Why would you do that?
Because it takes a layer off the stress in your heart.
Does it really? I know people say that, but
Because
they're.
what's the opposite of forgiveness? If you don't forgive, you hold on to something. If you're holding on to something, there's a charge there. If there's a charge of
No, no, no,
energy,
not necessarily. No, hang on a minute. Okay, so here we go. So a person who I was talking to the other day, who in my estimation is fairly enlightened, and he was saying that, because I was talking to him about this particular thing, and he was saying that forgiveness often comes in the form of law or justice, right? So actually, if somebody hurts you and they're not sorry, maybe until justice is applied, then you can be forgiving. And you see, the justice system has that part of it.
Yeah, but it's broken.
Well,
How often do you see that the justice system is broken?
whether it's broken or not, that process is probably correct, right? It's like, and even if you don't, like, for example, I had something negative happen to me with a neighbor. They broke into my property, they destroyed something, and they poisoned a tree in my yard, and I got poisoned. So what should I do? So should I just go, "Oh, I'll forgive you"? I don't really think so. You should take some action. And everyone would take action. If someone damages their property, everyone will take action. No one's going to be forgiving, are they? Like, if you knew someone came into your house and wrecked something that not only might cost you a lot of money and take a lot of work to organize to fix, you wouldn't just forgive them if you found out who they were. So why are people preaching this idea of forgiveness? That person just gets away with it. So I kind of, so, and because I think forgiveness is really powerful and I'm really into it. Of course, we forgive people all the time. We forgive our kids all the time. Forgiveness is fine. But in some things, if it's a pattern of behavior,
Yeah.
right, it's
And
that
the
it,
level of harm
and
caused.
the level of harm caused.
Yeah.
And so I think in they call that significant harm
Yeah,
when
right.
they do the measuring.
Yeah. Yeah, it's I don't, like most people, I don't think it's easy to forgive, especially if there's significant harm.
Right. But I think it can be resolved so that forgiving can, in the long run, become more possible.
So resolved without the support of the other person?
No, I don't think so. No, it's like for example, people tell me this all the time. Like I had one lady I was talking to recently, and she was talking about something that happened to her when she was like 17,
Yep.
had a boyfriend, and this guy virtually tortured her,
Yeah.
like really evil stuff. Beating the hell, and I won't go into the detail, but she's said she forgives him, but not talk to him ever.
Right.
Right, and still the effects of what he did are still playing out in her life,
Yeah.
right? Because it was actually really awful. So the forgiveness to me hasn't really helped. If I was counseling her, I'd suggest that let's have a look at it, depending on what they want to do. Maybe you still need, after 30 years,
Yeah.
to write a letter. To write a letter saying all of these things, and maybe they don't know where they are anymore, but at least write it, even if you don't send
That's
it,
right.
because that standing up for yourself needs to take place.
Yeah.
Forgiving them meant that you never stood up for yourself so that you can be manipulated again,
Yeah. There's a
and
meditation technique that you can do as well, which is sort of lighting a candle at the end of every day and just holding space for a minute or two and sort of just asking where any rage and anger and frustration is in the body and is there anyone I need to forgive? You know, and just you start the little process because the people who come to your mind when you just say that phrase, who do I need to forgive? They're the people who there's still an emotional
Yeah,
trigger in
but
there.
see, what I find hard about this, people go through that, and who do I need to forgive? But what about who do I need to say sorry to? I think that would be like a lot more of a who do I need to say sorry to? Who needs to forgive me? And who do I need to resolve things with so they can forgive me
So more
without?
the AA 10 commandments.
Well, the AA process is really, is that in that?
I don't know.
That's the 12 steps. But anyway, no, I'm just like, I just look at this thing and I go, well, if it's like so important to forgive, who do I need to resolve things with where I did the thing that wasn't right?
Yeah.
And I think that'd be more helpful for me than to do some fictitious forgiveness of someone that, what do they do in the Kung Fu movies, with the Shaolin monks? Compassion first,
Yeah.
but then action. Do you know what I mean? Yeah, compassion, but if compassion might mean give that person a chance to resolve
Right.
it. But if they still don't want to resolve it and hold their grudge, why would you forgive them? Because they're still out there doing, getting away with things. And they've got power because it wasn't resolved. So resolving things is good.
Well, interesting. Number six with the AA 12 steps is being ready to have a higher power remove character defects. So I suppose that's, sort of like who's the guy who wrote that book 100 years ago? How to Win Friends and Influence People.
Oh, yeah, Dale
Yeah.
Carnegie.
Yeah. So one of his chapters, he talks about Abraham Lincoln and how he actually tried to be president of the United States several times and lost and lost and lost. And what he did every month was chose a different deficit in his character. So if he didn't like kids, he would spend a whole month, hanging out with kids and, hugging them and playing with them and stuff like that. And then the next month he might not like old people. So he'd spend a whole month looking after old people
Oh,
and
yeah.
learning. So he basically
Well, that's
spent
getting
each
over your
month.
prejudices.
Yeah, so he spent each month with a new deficit in his character and eventually became, president.
Right.
And anyway, so it's sort of that's interesting.
Funny the 12 steps, because the guy who made the 12 steps, he went on a trial LSD program. And this is what he came of out of the trial. Yeah,
Really?
I
Oh,
know.
that's
It's
funny.
history. It's really quite amazing. So he was on an LSD trial, and after it, he realized this. And this is very effective with people, the 12 step, people get really Pretty good outcome for that.
I might share it just because it's a bit of fun. Like, even if you just get a screenshot of this, if you haven't seen them for a while, I certainly haven't looked at it for some time. But, admitting powerlessness over, alcohol, and of course, insert whatever is going on in your life, recognizing it's become unmanageable. Sometimes people don't recognize things are unmanageable, they just don't even get to that
Right.
first step.
But we're, at least with this, like, I don't necessarily like think this is the best thing in the world, but a lot of people get a benefit from the 12-step plan, and they have historically. But once again, it's the first thing in that is going is admitting you have a problem.
Yeah.
Right?
So
So,
it's about self-reflection. And
well,
going along to a group is about accountability. That's what
remember
counseling
back
is
in
for.
the idea of the confession for Catholics. First is admitting the thing.
Right. Yeah.
First, admitting the thing. And so when you look at this, it kind of mirrors some of those steps. First,
Yeah.
admitting the thing, and then what do you do?
That's what I hate about social media when they remove one of my posts because, an independent fact checker has checked it out and I'm wrong. And it
Right.
always annoys me because, for a start, they don't tell you what they've removed. So you have to guess what you've done wrong. But then they want you to censor yourself for the next 3 months so you don't lose your page.
Haven't they slowed down on that?
It's still happening. It's happened to me twice in the last week or two.
YouTube.
No, Facebook.
Oh.
Yeah. So, so much for our, what's his name? He needs to be fined more money, I reckon. Fine him, I reckon.
But they take that out of petty cash.
Yeah, they do. They
Yeah,
do.
so
They do.
fine,
They do.
960 million. They're like, thank God no one had to go to any further than that. Because that'll
Yeah,
take
so we
petty
sort of,
cash.
yeah, exactly. So when we were chatting about forgiveness early on, yeah, culture is a big thing as well. There's these culture wars going all around the world as well. And again, I know that it's always been the case, except that now governments all around the world are dictating what people can and can't say.
Well, there's
Which I find very frustrating.
something interesting about that is that one of the things Christianity was famous for, in far as culture was concerned, a lot of cultures that were there before Christ, like the Viking culture,
Yep.
because they didn't have a forgiveness principle, they were just involved in endless feudal wars.
Right.
But when they became Christian, they were able to forgive and then make peace.
Right,
There's a
okay.
good thing about forgiveness. And that's not the only. There were many cultures that Christianity came across that were basically eye for an eye, tooth for a tooth. And that was the same with the Jewish people. And
Yeah.
Jesus came to reform it using that thing,
Yeah.
right? And it's like, oh, we're not doing that anymore. And now it's like, forgive people. And it was a new thing. And that was one of the things that's made Christianity very popular. That it had that ability to do that, not only on an individual scale, but also on a political, country to country,
Right.
culture to culture.
Yeah.
Because the Vikings saw that they'd just be feuding forever. And of course, the Christians did anyway, but we don't have to go into that.
Yeah. And I was thinking the other thing was polarization that you mentioned earlier on as well, because the whole world's really polarized at the moment. And it's really interesting watching what media and governments are doing to force the polarization.
Yeah, but
It's like they're feeding the polarization of people all over the
the
place.
polarized people can't see it either, because polarized means only having empathy for your side,
Right.
right? And that's what's wrong with it. So that's called, I think there's that guy Gad Saad. He's
Gad
got a
said.
podcast, and his latest book is called something like Suicidal Empathy.
Oh, right, okay.
Because when you look at empathy studies, I've studied empathy particularly, there's all these negative types of empathy. And so, people in say cults, they all empathize with each other and they hate everyone outside, right?
Yeah.
And there's already something wrong with that. And so the empathy that's internal, so because good empathy should be able to go beyond my own group. Especially if I want to be a health professional or something,
Yeah.
because if only because we saw something recently where there was some controversy where somebody in the health professions was saying we weren't going to treat somebody of a certain culture, though not
Oh,
this,
man, that was evil
and
here in Sydney, Australia. That,
so
yeah.
whatever it is that so I don't want to
They
be,
weren't saying they weren't going to treat them. They said they were going to kill
I know
them.
that, but everyone knows the story. It's general knowledge now, and I don't want to bring that up. I just want to make the point about if we don't have empathy that goes beyond our own group, you end up with situations like that, which is the danger of all polarization, that we like our group, which might be left wing, and so we hate the right wing. Same if you're on the right wing, you hate the left wing automatically, don't even listen to what they have to say. Same as in family domestic violence, somebody's scapegoated, don't ever listen to them, no empathy for that person. It's always the same thing, that the empathy is limited to my group, my religion, my political party, my family, my culture. And the empathy can't go beyond that. And polarization increasing is the accretion of that element. That empathy goes to the wall of my group. And COVID made this worse because people in families used to be able to get between that and get in between their differences. But COVID made people completely polarized and
Because we
have
had the
no.
government and doctors saying it to people a
That's right.
billion
That's
times
right.
over 4 years.
And in that case, we also seem to have.
Yeah, dob them in, dob them in, dob them in, dob them in.
But once you're the same, you've got the same thing. Healthcare professionals not having correct empathy because of a biased position, right? So if we're going to look up empathy, it's good to look at the negative side of empathy too. And if you want to look at that up, the best one of the best people is her name's Sarah Conrath, and she's a Canadian. And she did a paper with she did a paper. It's a chapter in a book with Delphine Greinberg called The Positive and Negative Aspects of Empathy, the first large study ever done on that. And it's a brilliant thing if you can find it.
It's funny, the whole polarization thing. I was having a chat with some friends on the weekend and we think totally polar opposite, haha, when it comes to politics. And it's funny because at one stage, one of them made a comment. There was one word in there that could have been considered political. And instantly he put his hand out at me and he said, I didn't mean to bring in politics into this because obviously they have a let's not talk to the crazy woman policy. And, anyway, and I of course quoted Anne of Green Gables, which was, if you knew how many things I thought about that didn't say, you'd at least give me some credit. Which of course I said. And yes, because you don't get any credit for what you don't say.
Well, the old school way of doing it was don't talk publicly about sex, politics, or religion.
But then no one hears other perspectives when you do that.
Oh, I know that. That's
You know,
polite.
and then the
That's
government,
polite society.
yeah, but it, you know, what fun is that?
Well, it's diplomacy.
Yeah. Anyway, it's all pretty good fun. Anyway, so yeah, so forgiveness, there's definitely two sides to the
Forgiveness
story.
is something that is definitely worth looking at in a deeper way because what we want is resolution so that we can have a clear mind, so that we're not thinking about it all the time. But sometimes it's listening. Like they say, some of the counseling theorists say, if there was more listening, reciprocal listening, there'd be no need for justice. But if people won't listen and they keep doing the same things when you try to put up a boundary, then you might need justice. Right, and justice so that forgiveness can take place later, because maybe that'll stop the same thing being done over and over again. And justice might just be telling somebody and not allowing yourself to be isolated and just saying, look, this person is like really not being very nice.
Beautiful. Well, hopefully, yeah, interesting.
Very interesting, isn't it? So forgiveness is something that is always in debate. It's something that's evolving and changing because obviously you see different religions have a different perspective on it. Because some people, you're not allowed to forgive people of some religion.
Which is fun too.
The whole thing's ironic. The irony of forgiveness
The irony of religion.
and religion.
Okay, everyone, have a great day. Take care. Are the little hearts cute? He filled them all in for me.
Oh, a little cutie.
Little kitty. Bye.